Techno 1000.
Electronic music, in a sense, is more like cooking. You know, very sensual, tactile, when you put your hands into loops and beats and frequencies to create some music. And I love that. The first time I heard Autobahn, I thought it was a Californian band singing in German and very influenced by the Beach Boys. The Love Parade, you know, for me, it has a direct link with what I tried to do from the beginning of my career.
Techno 1000, Now It Can Be Told, the podcast from Jürgen Lahrmann, direct from Hastings Sound Studios in Berlin.
Hello, this is Jürgen Lahrmann speaking. This is edition number one of my podcast, Techno 1000, directly from Berlin, from the Hastings Audio Network. Today, we've got one of the biggest icons of electronic music here in the studio. It's Jean-Michel Jarre, who just releases his new album, Equinox Infinity. I've done many interviews with many great artists in my life, but I have a feeling this one is going to be special. It seems to me, Jean-Michel, that Infinity is just an ultimate universal record. It basically fits all sorts of occasions, including christenings and funerals. Can you relate to that sentiment? And what would be your preferred occasion to listen to Infinity?
I love this comment, I must say, particularly the one with funerals or any kind of important moments in life, because I do think that with electronic music being mainly instrumental, what's interesting is actually the idea that to let people create their own story or their own movie in their mind, which I think is the most important thing. And I must say, with this Equinox Infinity, this is actually what I try to, for the first time, I think that I'm quite happy with an album I've done, just because actually the record company gave me one extra month after the official deadline. So each time, you know, I'm frustrated about the fact that I said, I listened to the recording when it's finished, and I said, I did, okay, I should have done this in this way or that way. And then I got this extra month to adjust what I wanted to do. And then this whole idea was really to try to create, in days where we are in a zapping mode on YouTube or wherever, but also we are able to watch all the seasons of Game of Thrones without hardly sleeping for a weekend. I think I love the idea that an album could be like a soundtrack, like a movie. And I love your comment about the fact that this music could be universal, because it's what I tried to do with Equinox Infinity.
Cool. Without any doubt, you have been one of the key persons in developing the whole genre of synthesizer music. And that influenced the following generations: disco, electro-funk, techno, house music, acid house. Did you watch and follow these developments? Were there any particular style that did impress you or even influenced you along the way?
Yeah, of course. When I started, I was quite convinced that the 21st century would be the century of electronic music. I was convinced when I started that this genre would become major in the future, and because it was the first time for musicians that we had the possibility to think music not only in terms of notes based on solfeggio, but really approaching music through sounds and having a kind of organic approach to sounds, you know, which is very strange with electronic music. Is still today, you have out there some kind of preconceived ideas about the fact that electronic music could be cold or robotic. And I always thought the reverse. I thought it's less, much less intellectual than or cerebral or abstract than writing on a piece of paper some notes on a score, and then giving this piece of paper to musicians to play the music you have in your mind. I love that. I mean, it's no question about that. But I think that electronic music, in a sense, is more like cooking. You know, very sensual, tactile, when you put your hands into loops and beats and frequencies to create some music. And I love that. And I think that all these genres you were talking about through time, I mean, for me, I feel much more in phase today probably than I was when I started, where I was considered as a kind of crazy guy working with strange machines, even not considered even by by the rock people, for instance, like real instruments. So I think in a way, I think all these different subgenres of electronic music are part of the, of my family.
Okay, just like you, Kraftwerk are considered pioneers of the movement of electronic music. How do you see their role? Is there any particular track or album that you see as a milestone that you that influenced you as well? Or
you know, it's very very interesting with the relationship with Kraftwerk, because we started more or less at the same time on both sides of the French-German frontier border.
Yeah.
And it was, of course, far before the internet. And we had very, very little information about what everybody was doing. And I must tell you a story about that. The first time I heard Autobahn, I thought it was a Californian band singing in German and very influenced by the Beach Boys. And then I discovered afterwards that they were actually German. And you know, it's just to tell you how little information we had of each other in the world of electronic music in those days. And I think, of course, for me, albums such as Autobahn and Radioactivity, I mean, being released more or less at the same time as Oxygen, and was have been, of course, a very strong source of inspiration to me. And with the idea also that, and it's an interesting, I think, point, that I would make a difference between the German electronic music and French electronic music at that time, and even later on, and even today. I think they with Tangerine Dream or Kraftwerk, they had a quite a cold and robotic approach of electronic music, like even Tangerine Dream leaving the stage and letting sequences playing on their own in a kind of apology of machines, where on my side I always had a much more impressionist approach to music, which is actually the difference between maybe French creative process and German creative process, where I feel from influenced by Ravel, Debussy, or you know, all this kind of impressionist painting, French painting, where I mean, in days where the German bands were very interested by having this kind of very cold repetitive approach. I remember in my old days, I mean, my first album, I was obsessed that every sequence should be different. Every sound in an album should be not exactly the same as the previous one. I mean, to try to create this kind of soundscape. So it was actually, we had this discussion with Edgar Froese because I collaborated with, I've been really privileged to collaborate with him just before he passed away. It was the last Tangerine Dream track we did actually on my Electronica project called Zero Gravity. And he told me something very, very interesting, saying, you know, we had, I thought actually they were even started before me. And he said, no, when you started before us, because actually when we started, we were more into prog rock and we went to electronic a little bit later. But I mean, having said that, we shared that this idea about the fact that I always had kind of impressionist approach to electronic music, like Air, or like people like Rohn, or even Gesaffelstein. I mean, even in more techno style, we have this kind of different approach. What makes actually German art forms and French art forms quite complementary.
No, I really like the idea that we had like similar developments, which have been different in France and in Germany. For us, for example, Yellow and Deutsch-Amerikanische Freundschaft have been very important. Did they mean anything to you?
Of course. I mean, Yellow has been also a great source of inspiration to me. You know, with this project I developed a few years ago called Electronica, the idea was to create collaborations and collaborative work with people I admire and linked to the electronic music scene, and has been a very important source of inspiration to me. And of course, Yellow is very high in my wish list. And I think they have, you know, which is very important to understand is actually electronic music at the beginning has nothing to do with America, with jazz, blues, rock. It's something coming from continental Europe. It's coming from France, Germany, Italy with the first Art of Noises in the beginning of 20th century with the theremin, with Russia. And it's really something coming from our heritage from classical music, this long instrumental piece, nothing to do with the pop and rock concept of the Anglo-Saxon world, even if they later on, of course, produced lots of very interesting artists. But originally, it's really coming from Germany and France, with Stockhausen on one side and Pierre-Henri Pierre Schaeffer on the other side. It's coming there. It's the reason why that the German scene, electronic music scene, and the French music scene is so important all over the world today.
Yeah, I agree totally. But we have one aspect we should talk about. Your music always has been very atmospheric and just beautiful. Techno, the style we like, has had always a dirty industrial approach. It's not really your style of music, but do you enjoy it, the industrial sounds, and do you understand that type of music? Does it play a role for you, maybe as an opposite genre?
No, but of course, I love it. You know, it took me some time to understand that whatever you do, you are who you are. And, you know, I would dream to be Rammstein. You know, or to be Massive Attack, you know, but I'm myself. And actually, yeah, I remember that I met Fellini, the Italian film director, at his end of his life. And he told me something that really made me think and a great source of inspiration. He told me, you know, Jean-Michel, I always thought for every movie that I was able to do a totally different movie. And now looking back, I realized that I always did the same one. Whatever I do. And I think it's very true that about the fact that whatever you do, I mean, if you step back, the Beatles, Tarantino, Welbeck, they all say, or Stanley Kubrick, or Coldplay, they all say, or Kraftwerk, they all tell you the same thing. They all say they're all doing the same song, the same movie, the same novel all over their lives. It's what we call style. And you can't escape, whatever you do as an artist, you can't escape from your style if you have one.
Electronic music always has been related to the clubs. And I mean, you're along for quite a while in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Was there ever a time where you enjoyed really clubbing, to go out to clubs, to discos?
Always.
Always.
Still now, I love it. I mean, it all depends on the club and the DJ. But you know, which is behind your question, there is something very important. You know, yesterday, I would say, we had to, when the emergence of DJs, we suddenly thought that electronic music was only made for dance floor, which is not the case. When you created the Love Parade, it's actually very, very important to understand that even techno is not only for dance floor. You know, you always have in all music genres and movements, two sides. One is the hedonist side, which is, I mean, having fun until the morning, and in dancing and making parties, and a more social or maybe darker side, which is the social aspect of it. I mean, the techno coming from Detroit is also a kind of reaction against the Detroit. I mean, falling apart, the old industrial city just being dying. And I think that's something very, very important in electronic music, is to check that, to see that actually, you know, you beyond dance floor, beyond all this, I mean, electronic music is a major genre because also it's linked with technology. It's with new technology. As artists of electronic music, we are probably the closest artists today to be aware of new technology, of artificial intelligence, of the relationship, the difficult situation with technology and the relationship with technology, with the internet, with the dark side of the internet. The reason why I did a collaboration with Edward Snowden, for instance, it's all that, because in our world of electronic music, whatever the genre is, we have this kind of privileged, I would say, or close relationship with new technology. And it's what also the clubbing world is all about, is actually a reflection of our society these days.
Back in the days, when we talk about the political aspect, Were you aware that you had a large following in East Germany before the breakdown of the wall? You've been released on Amiga Records, which has been like the state record company of the GDR. Did you have that in mind?
It took me a while to realize that actually, even in Russia or in some Eastern countries, my albums, my music was even forbidden. I say, what's that? That's really strange. And I heard that in Hungary and Poland, that they told me that in Russia. And because my music was symbol of escape, evasion, and freedom. And I couldn't believe it. I said, it's amazing. And then it was the same thing with Pink Floyd, even if they have words. I mean, it was just this idea that music should be a way to get away from the regime and from the communism and from the lack of freedom. And so I realized that. And I must say that I've been really, felt really honored and privileged to be banned, first of all, in those countries. And of course, Eastern Germany has always been very special to me because, you know, my mother was a great figure in the French resistance. And I've been raised at a very early age to by her saying that you should make a difference between ideology and the people. And in those days, making difference between German people and Nazis. Not the same. And that's something very important. It was not that common in France in those days. And then I went to Berlin at a very early stage because my cousin was heading the, he was in charge of the food for the French army in Berlin. So I went to East Germany through the metro, the famous station where you could go to East Germany. So I had this feeling even when I was a teenager and a kid, to the East Berlin feel. So it was a big honor and privilege to have later on my music being played in this part of your country.
Actually, do you know any artists from electronic music from Germany nowadays? Is there anything that interests you? Is there anybody?
Of course, lots of people. The Berlin scene is very big. I mean, I love Boys Noize. I made a collaboration with him. I love lots of different kind of young artists. I really love. I mean, the Berlin scene is so rich all the time. And you know, we're not saying enough that the electronic music world owes so much to Germany. Not only in terms of musicians, but you know, if you take all the DAWs and the sequencers we're using all over the world, Pro Tools, Steinberg, Avid, Native Instruments, they're all from Germany originally. And we know if you take away the German equipment, we'll be orphans. we will have to go back to tape, magnetic tape, you know.
Okay, so let's talk about your countrymen. We adore, for example, Laurent Garnier. We love Daft Punk. We are very interested in what Ed Banger Records is doing. And we watch David Guetta from a safe distance. And actually some more, many more to mention. Do you have any more hints we should watch, which French musicians we should watch and listen to?
Yes, you have a lot. Yeah, you have. I love also the darker side of electronic music. You have two interesting bands called. One is Perturbator. Perturbator is a kind of dark, and another one is Carpenter Brut.
Ah, okay.
Carpenter Brut is really heavily influenced by John Carpenter, one idol of mine, and they're quite interesting, very dark, very interesting, and I would say that not French, but I've been very interested by. I was in Los Angeles last week, and I heard about a very interesting artist you should follow. It's called Death Pact. I don't know if you heard about him because he just did five tracks. Very, very interesting. He's actually a kind of electronic techno Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails type. Very interesting. He's very mysterious. You don't know who he is. He just did five tracks, but he's very interesting. Death Pact.
We will definitely check that out. So let's go overground now. We have here, you've been always been known for your big concerts and mass spectacles, and you played for more than 1.3 million people, and you made some of the biggest events in the whole wide world. And the only thing we have here in Germany, and I was quite proud to participate a bit, was the Love Parade.
The Love Parade, you know, for me is a direct, that has a direct link with what I tried to do from the beginning of my career, by trying to find other ways to perform electronic music and to share electronic music with an audience. I have always been convinced that, you know, the major difference between rock, classical music, jazz, and electronic music is actually when you take an electric guitar, a clarinet, a violin, these instruments have been conceived and devised for performance. And then we put microphones on them to record them. For electronic instruments, it's the opposite. We devise and design these instruments in studios and then we had a major problem to share the perform electronic music and to put these instruments on stage. So we had to find other ways to share the music with the audience with electronic music. This is the reason why I, at a very early stage, I've been, I think, the first one really to integrate so much visual in my performances by giant projections and also going outside. I've always been convinced that electronic music is made more for outside and outdoor situations. And then it was logical for me that rave as a phenomenon, the rave phenomenon existed, and then parades such as the Love Parade being the first parade in the world. It has been inspiring for so many countries later on, like we have the Techno Parade in France now. I mean, it's just, and that is actually something also linked with this idea of nomadism, the fact that I always considered electronic music like hijacking a place for one night, hijacking a street, a city for one day and one night, and to create music and giving energy in the street. And for me, that Love Parade has been very influential for lots of reasons of what I'm talking about.
Some say Love Parade changed a bit the image of Germany as a whole. Berlin was known in former times as the lieu for the Prussian regime, the Nazi regime, the communist regime. The better part of the century wasted away. At the Love Parade, people from Germany and Israel came together, from Germany and Poland came together, from Germany and France and from all over Europe and all over the world came together and danced together and celebrated a giant party. Did you think that this changed the image of Berlin and whole Germany?
Certainly so. And it's a very good point, and thank you for mentioning that, because for me, it's something very important in my life. This idea that, I've always been a very strong link with Germany. And today, my record company, intentionally, is based in Berlin. The publishing company representing my work is also in Berlin. So I have lots of link with Germany. And I've always been touched and moved by, and also coming from my family, as I said, my mother was in a deportation camp, and she's been a great figure in the French Resistance. So I've been linked with Germany, and I've always been very moved by the fact that even today, all your generations are probably much less arrogant than the French and the British. The fact that you are, guys, I mean, much more open. I always felt that. And it's very important for an outsider to say that to you in a very friendly way. Much more open, not arrogant. And also because probably you still have unconsciously this kind of guilt, and that should stop. And because now it was yesterday. And I think the Love Parade sent that signal, saying now we are entering in a different era of Germany. And suddenly Love Parade became, on a social and philosophical point of view, something that saying, okay, Berlin and Germany is able to convey the idea of love and not only the idea of something darker.
Okay, the core idea of the Love Parade was unifying the powers that lie within music and dance, a global message of love and peace overcoming borders and set religions, nations, races, nothing matters. It was just, sheer festival of peace. And is it something you strive for with your music too, or is it more the collective togetherness or the pure entertainment? When you compare it to all the works you've done, is it basically the same what Love Parade wanted to do, or do you have another approach?
I think it's we are on the same page. I think that in my concerts, I always try to giving messages. I'm not at ease with these colleagues of mine and artists, especially in the rock business. I mean, transforming the stage of their performance into a kind of political platform and giving lessons to the world. I don't like this, but I think that through our work, through our music and events, trying to share convictions and messages. What I've done in Israel, what I've done in Egypt with the pyramids, what I've done in the desert of Sahara, what I've done actually recently in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, when, you know, probably today is the most controversial country in the world because of what happened recently. I think that I'm absolutely against any kind of boycotts. I think especially when you have a country having problems or with freedom. And as I said at the beginning of our conversation, when you have, you should not mix an ideology and the people, because otherwise it's a double punishment. If on top of the fact that people can't have the privilege to have the freedom we have in our countries, it's a double punishment. It on top of it, they have no music, they have no movies, they have no literature. And to go back to the Love Parade, I mean, that is exactly what it was. It had a kind of social impact and social importance. It was not just people just dancing in the street and having fun. It's created this kind of very positive message, not only to the youth but also to the world, saying, "Hey guys, we are not what you think we have, and also we have to also we are able to express ourselves, and also to allow other people from other countries to come to Germany and expressing themselves." And that was, of course, very important.
To me, there are big links between your bigger live music adventures and the mass-pleasing art installations of Christo and Jean-Claude. Do you see these connections?
Yes, of course. I think that, I always considered, if I was not a musician, I would maybe become an architect. And I've always been very interested by when I'm not touring, but doing one-offs, such as the one I've done in my life so far. I mean, between a concert performance and a like land art installation, like we're hijacking one city, hijacking one, for one night and transforming the environment for one night, is for me very, very important for different reasons. Because actually you change the environment of a city forever. Because, for instance, like the Love Parade where the Love Parade went through a street, for instance, that changed the street forever. And it's what I like in a concert, by projecting giant images on a building, for instance, because suddenly it's changing this place forever. And it's what, in that sense, it's what Christo did also.
Okay, to conclude this, if money and logistics didn't matter, what event would you like to do in your life as like the biggest thing ever made? The one that tops them all.
On the moon.
On the moon.
Yeah,
all
of
right.
course.
That would be a nice idea. I want to see your show on the moon.
And
that
on the dark side, but also on the bright side of the moon.
Okay, so yeah, we have to work on that. Maybe Richard Branson can help a bit.
That's right.
Very good. Okay, as a private person, How do you listen to music? How do you choose it? How can we imagine Jean-Michel Jarre listening to music? Do you listen to radio? Do you have people who do a pre-selection for you? Or do you get promo copies sent like DJs? I just ask myself, how are you listening to music?
Actually, I'm not listening to radio that much. I used to listening to the radio in my car, but I'm not using my car. I'm using my car much less in France, except to go to my studio. But most of the time, I'm listening to music from my computer. And I'm receiving lots of different music. I'm of course mainly interested in electronic music. I receive a lot of things, and I'm very curious. But I must say that also I'm not exclusively listening to electronic music. I love all kinds of music. It depends. I love to listen to heavy metal, to classical music, to jazz, to hip hop. It depends on the mood really. And I hardly. It's one I could share with your listeners. Is actually, you know, try to listen to things you're not aware of or you don't know about, because it's so good for your inspiration and for I mean, if you are into techno, let's try jazz, or let's try I don't know, African music or classical music. I think it's very, 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 because by the end of the day, you know, I mean, good music is good music, whatever the style.
That's the best advice. Okay, tell us a little bit of the part of you that isn't a musician. Are you a supporter of a football club, a movie buff, a foodie, maybe a collector of weird memorabilia? What are your hobbies? What gets you excited?
So I love movies a lot. I almost watch one movie or some per day at night. I love movies. I mean, my biggest inspiration, source of inspiration, have been from movies. You know, I started electronic music just around when 2001 Space Odyssey has been released, and I remember that I saw this movie 7 times every day. Like it's happened to me just once, but this movie influenced me so much. So movies is a lot. I love also going to art galleries and museums. I'm very linked with contemporary art, so I love that. Each time I go to Berlin, I try to watch some galleries or things like this, for instance, everywhere. And otherwise, I also, of course, love football. I'm very proud of my country this year, of course.
That was my next question.
And but I must say that I'm a big fan of the German team as well. I have big respect from the German team, even if you didn't do that well. You always do very well, and we are always afraid of the German team historically in France. It's very funny because talking about football, one second, you know. The German are always afraid from the Italian. The French are afraid of German. The Italian are afraid of French. And it's very funny that actually you have sometimes difficult relationship in terms of football with some countries, but it's not necessarily the same.
It's like a cycle of fear.
Yeah, exactly. Cycle of fear. Very well put. Yes.
Yeah, that's a very interesting aspect, because when we talk about things that unify people, it's music and it's football.
Yeah, the reason why we are
very
close.
What else do we have, actually? Yeah. I think music and football, equally where you go in the whole wide world, you can, even when you have like, you only can 3 words in a language when you say, yeah, love. That's true. Toby is right. Love is one more.
Yeah, but it's rare to make love in a stadium, or you have to be a real exhibitionist, you know.
That's for sure. Okay, you've been always interested in the latest technical developments to produce music. And do you still follow the trends, especially artificial intelligence, or do you leave that to a younger generation?
I know. I don't have that sense of time. My next studio album is all about evolution of technology and artificial intelligence. For this album, Equinox Infinity, I started for the first time in my life by the visuals. You know, for people knowing electronic music, I mean, I thought this cover from Equinox, the first one, is one of the most iconic covers of the vinyl era, with these strange creatures looking at you. Yeah. That we were discussing just before the conversation in the other room. And I said, okay, these creatures, what happened to them later on today? And what would happen to them in 40 years from now? And these watchers, as I call them, for me, are symbolizing the evolution of technology. People, I mean, the technology learning from us, watching us. And of course, this is what technology is doing to us through artificial intelligence. And I'm very involved with artificial intelligence. I think that, you know, people don't realize that within the next 10 years, robots, artificial intelligence, would be able to create original music, original movies, original stories and novels. And that's going to create something very strange for artists, because we'll have to deal with a total new environment, with robots and machines able to do music without us. So we'll have to reposition ourselves regarding this new situation. But I love that, you know. I've always been, you know, against this idea that our grandparents, our parents, and today, lots of people always say yesterday was better and tomorrow is going to be worse. If you look back, I mean, the future has always been slightly better. We should not forget that 150 years ago, I mean, we were dying at 45 years old, 40 years old. We were losing our teeth probably at 25, and we could die from a cold and a flu. So it meant by the end of the day, future has always been better than the past. But now, with artificial intelligence, there is still a big question mark. And this is the reason why I did this new album with two different covers that you can have. One is a peaceful and green and blue environment where we could be okay, and the other one is darker and more apocalyptic. And I did this new album as a soundtrack, working with both possibilities.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. So, do you think that in our lives we will see that machines will create music on their own that is pleasing us even more than human handmade music?
You know, I think that something very interesting happened recently in China. The world champion of Game of Go, which is far more creative than chess, I mean, competed against a computer. And he won the first game. Then the second game, they were even. And then he lost the third one. And since he lost all of them, so the computer is winning. Yeah. And then the result of that is actually, in the following 2 years, the Game of Go lost 50% of its interest. 50% less Chinese people are playing the Game of Go now. They are not interested anymore. Why? Because the computer won. The problem is with artificial intelligence. I'm absolutely convinced that robots will be able to do original music, very interesting music, and unexpected music. So my question is, does it mean that musicians will stop making music and that will become the territory of robots? It's still a question mark.
One last question. If the NASA will send a rocket to the space with memorabilia of mankind, and three audio discs would be in the spaceship, and you are the curator, one should be one of your products. Would it be an Oxygen or Infinity Equinox?
So actually, it's a difficult question for me to answer because there is already some music in space with Oxygen, because it has been launched when I was involved with the Houston concert. There has a lot of things, and my music has been sent already. So if it's something is sent again, it would be definitely Equinox Infinity.
Okay. And the other two recordings should be of other artists. You are still the curator. Which one would you choose?
I would choose Anything from Beethoven and Sketches of Spain from Miles Davis.
All right, that's a good choice. By the way, you already mentioned Edward Snowden, so I take it that you are quite a political person. And can you talk about the current political climate in France?
I think the political climate in France is the same as, it is in Germany, and I would say all over the world. It seems that politicians are not able to handle the situation anymore. It's not their fault. It's not because one is good or better or worse. It's just because the world is evolving so much that I think that the whole structure of the way we considered politics so far is coming at an end, and we need something else. We thought that with Macron, it would be the French president, it would be different. And there is a big disappointment in France, because actually, after 1 year, we realize that whatever he can do, the structures are still the same. And I think we have, as citizens of the world, to think politics in a total different way. We have to face and to understand that we cannot just give and responsibility to the people we are electing, because actually they are the reflection of ourselves. So we should, in terms of climate change, in terms of new technology, I'm convinced that we will be able to survive in the 21st century only if we can evolve in good faith and good intelligence with climate change and nature, environment, and artificial intelligence. These two elements are very linked together, and we are not prepared to that. I mean, it's only through education that we'll be able to solve one of the major problems of the planet that almost nobody is talking about, is demography. I mean, I remember that a good friend of mine, Commandant Cousteau, Jacques Cousteau, told me one day, he said, you know, until 800 million people, I mean, the Earth is made for 800 million people. Until 2 billion people, it's okay. But after 2 billion, we are too many in front of the same fridge. And I love this idea because it's absolutely true. And how to think about unemployment, the problem of migrants, when we'll be 10 or 11 million, billions. We have to solve that. I mean, I had this discussion with Stephen Hawking. I mean, last year I've been really honored to receive the Stephen Hawking Medal in Norway, and for art and communication and science. And he was saying something very important. He said, you know, by the end of the 21st century, maybe we'll have to leave Earth and to going to colonize another planet, because because of environment, because of demography, we'll have to go somewhere else. So it means that, you know, we should stop questioning our, I'm talking about in democracy. I'm not talking about North Korea, but I'm talking about in our countries. We have, as people from the social society, we have to think about thinking politics in a different way. Think about and not having the kind of president becoming a kind of king, and the kind of people who are waiting, or prime minister. We are waiting from Angela and Macron and Angela Merkel everything, or from Trump or from Putin. And I think we should really reconsider how ruling our countries, and with more involvement of ourselves, of a civil society.
But in a way, it's ironic that there is a second point about demographics. On the one hand, the Earth becomes overpopulated. On the other hand, you have a big demographic gap in Western countries, which makes it hard to pay the pensions in the next 20 years.
Yeah, I think it's the absurdity of our system. Where we are at the same time we know that demography is an issue, and at the same time we are encouraging people being more and having more children, and because in terms of economy is the way it works. So it's the reason why I say that we have to go into a total change, and this total change doesn't mean that we should not having fun. We should just be not using technology, but actually we just have to change our way. For instance, a very, very, very common idea today is actually tomorrow, if we replace energy from petrol to solar energy or some other energies, it will change a lot in terms of how we are spending energy and wasting energy on the planet, for instance. But there is a lot of other aspects we could really change easily if we as citizens, as private people, changing our mind. It's not a matter only, because a lot of people could say, oh yes, but what can I do, you know, as one individual? Okay, I can take care of my garbage and all that, but it's not going to change everything. Yes and no.
I think one of the biggest problems at the moment is the right-wing popularism that is going across all the countries. And that is a big fear, a big threatening to the European idea, for example. And I think looking back on the days of Love Parade, we had like the conception, which was very naive, that the values of Love Parade, like the togetherness, the peaceful, the absence of racism, and the respect and the freedom of creativity, that all could be a base for common living together. We call it once back in the days, raving society. Do you think that could be in a way a start for the real society, that the dance scene or the rave scene really has an impact to the real society with these values to restructure the political system?
You know, it's exactly the same. We are talking about the same thing. I mean, if there is the a rise increase of extreme right ideas, it's because the political system are not answering to our needs, and of course the Love Parade is a good example of suddenly, I mean, private people, individuals suddenly wants to send a positive message. It's what we need, but what we did in a kind of neo hippie innocent way should be done in a more structured way, to say, okay, how can we really improve the country? I mean, the rise of extreme right is just coming because people are fed up about the fact that we are not doing anything and moving anything because it's not possible. I think that a lot of politicians these days, I mean, you can't say that politicians are just bad guys and cynical. I mean, lots of people in politics are going into politics because they have ambition to change the world. I mean, lots of politicians are good people, but when they are in charge, they realize that whatever they do, working 20 hours a day, they may change the just things of 1 or 2%. It's not enough, and so it has to come from us, you know.
So true. All right. So I think it was the most brilliant interview.
Just one more thing about Edward Snowden, because you just mentioned that, and just talking about that. You know, these days, which is very important for us guys about electronic music and all that. I think because I mentioned that, but we've been. Why did I wanted to collaborate with somebody like Edward Snowden? Because when I heard him, he made me think about my mother in a very strange way. You could say why, and because my mother, being, as I said, a great figure in the French Resistance, I've been raised with the fact that when ideals or acts are generated by the power in place, some of us, we have to stand up against it. And it's exactly what Edward Snowden did. He just did what he did to improve his country, not to be a traitor. We must never forget that every political change and social changes have been done against the power in place. The abolition of slavery, the rights of votes for women. I mean, even the United States, they've been built on an act of what was considered as an act of treason regarding the king in those days. So, you know, it's the reason why that we have to encourage this kind of people. I mean, for me, Edward Snowden is a modern hero because he just told us, be careful, guys, about the dark side of the internet. And it's very important. And for us, as part of the technological world, it's very, very important to be a kind of go-between some people in the street and things we can know about new technology.
How many minutes per day do you spend in the internet, if I may ask?
You know, I think that I realized recently that I probably spend more time with machines than with human beings. It's the reason why I'm so pleased to talk to you guys.
Okay, thank you. It was such a brilliant interview. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for
Thank you, likewise. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Originally, we wanted to start our podcast in January 2019, but Jean-Michel Jarre gave us a head start. So watch out on our Facebook page, fb.com, Techno1000, who is coming next to our show.
That was an episode of Techno 1000, the podcast from Jürgen Lahrmann, direct from Hastings Sound Studios in Berlin. Presented by Zebra AudioNet, the podcast company from Zebralution.
Techno 1000.